So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata, text number 22. It's really, anyhow, it's just the translation. Swayambhuva Manu, with the insistence of Lord Brahma, thus fulfilled his desires. With the permission of the great sage Narada, he delivered to his son the governmental responsibility for maintaining and protecting all the planets of the universe. He thus achieved relief from the most dangerous, poisonous ocean of material desires. So please repeat. Swayambhuva Manu, with the assistance of Lord Brahma, thus fulfilled his desires. With the permission of the great sage Narada, he delivered to his son the governmental responsibility for maintaining and protecting all the planets of the universe. He thus achieved relief from the most dangerous, poisonous ocean of material desires. So it appears that Swayambhuva Manu gave his son the most dangerous, poisonous ocean of material desires to lord it over the universe. But at least he got relief from it, even though Priyavrata had to suffer. Purport. Swayambhuva Manu is practically hopeless because such a great personality as Narada was instructing his son Priyavrata not to accept household life. Now he is very pleased that Lord Brahma had interfered by inducing his son to accept the responsibility for ruling the government of the universe. From Bhagavad Gita we get information that Vivashvata Manu was the son of the sun god, and that his son Maharaj Ikshvaku ruled this planet Earth. Swayambhuva Manu, however, appears to have been in charge of the entire universe, and he entrusted to his son Maharaj Priyavrata the responsibility for maintaining and protecting all the planetary systems. Dhara Mandala means planet. This earth, for instance, is called Dhara Mandala. Akila, however, means all or universal. Therefore, it is difficult to understand where Maharaj Priyavrata was situated. But from this literature, his position certainly appears greater than that of Vaivashvata Manu, for he was entrusted with all the planetary systems of the entire universe. Another significant statement is that Swayambhuva Manu took great satisfaction from abnegating the responsibility for ruling all the planetary systems of the universe. At present, politicians are very eager to take charge of the government, and they engage their men in canvassing from door to door to get votes to win the post of president or a similar exalted office. On the contrary, however, herein we find that King Priyavrata had to be persuaded by Lord Brahma to accept the post of emperor of the entire universe. Similarly, his father, Swayambhuva Manu, felt relieved to entrust the universal government to Priyavrata. Thus, it is evident that the kings and executive heads of government in the Vedic age never accepted their positions for sense enjoyment. Such exalted kings, who are known as Rajarshis, ruled only to maintain and protect the kingdom for the welfare of the citizens. The history of Priyavrata and Swayambhuva Manu describes how exemplary, responsible monarchs perform the duties of government with disinterest, keeping themselves aloof from the contamination of material attachment. Material affairs have been compared to an ocean of poison, They have been described in a similar way by Srila Narottam Das Thakur in one of his songs, Samsara Vishanale Diva Nisha Hiya Dwale Judaitena Kainu Upaya. My heart is always burning in the fire of material existence, and I have made no provisions for getting out of it. Olokera Premadana Harinama Sankirtana Ratina Janmila Kenotaya. The only remedy is Harinam Sankirtan, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is imported from the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. How unfortunate I am that I have no attraction for this. Manu wanted to seek shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. And therefore, when his son Priyavrata took charge of his worldly affairs, Manu was very relieved. That is the system of Vedic civilization. At the end of life, one must free himself from worldly affairs and completely engage in the service of the Lord. The word surashi vara anumatena is also significant. Manu entrusted the government to his own son with permission of the great Saint Narada. This is particularly mentioned because although Narada wanted Priyavrata to become free from all material affairs, when Priyavrata took charge of the universe by the request of Lord Brahma and Manu, Narada was also very pleased. So the translation again, Swayambhuva Manu, with the assistance of Lord Brahma, thus fulfilled his desires. With the permission of the great sage Narada, he delivered to his son the governmental responsibility for maintaining and protecting all the universe. He thus achieved relief from the most dangerous, poisonous ocean of material desires. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Purushottaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tadamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Prajarane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyade Satarane. When I studied history in high school, mostly in high school, I guess it was a little everything is about history, even in college. But it's generally the history of the demons fighting with each other. One demon conquering another, one kingdom, and then some other demon coming along and reconquering the kingdom. The history of Europe is about one demon fighting with another demon. And whoever is the current demon, they rewrite history to make it appear that they're the good guys and everyone else is bad. And was bad. But actually, in Kali Yuga, which is the general history that's written, the only history really is about people fighting for economic development to steal property from other people and then trying to enjoy it to the maximum sense gratification until they get worn out and some other demon comes along and removes them and tries to do the same thing. America's famous for the cowboys and the Indians, not the Indian Indians, the American Indians. And their whole description is how the Americans, they came to this barbaric place called America, looking for India so they could steal from India in the name of business. But somehow or another, they wound up in America, so they decided to steal from the Indians there. But of course, if you're going to steal from someone and do whatever other things that you want to, then you have to designate them as barbaric, because otherwise it wouldn't be fair. If they were civilized, if they were human beings, then you couldn't do whatever you like. But if they're less than animals, then of course it's your duty to steal from them and exploit them, rape them, whatever you want, kill them, because they're less than human beings, and certainly that's what human beings are supposed to do. So, although they were minding their own business, the Indians more or less, but of course it was the obligation of the Westerners to exploit them. Just like in Australia, when the settlers came to, what was the name of the place? Tasmania. At Tasmania. They lined up, all the settlers lined up on a side of the island, and then they just marched through the island, killed every man, woman, and children who was native of the island in the name of civilizing the island. So you can imagine who was left after they killed every man, woman, and children, what kind of people were left on the island. But no worries, she'll be right. And the rest of the history of the modern world is more or less all about that, giving someone a bad name and then doing whatever you like. Or Prabhupada said, give the dog a bad name and then you can hang the dog. But modern civilization has no experience of real dharma or the goal of life being liberation from the material concept of life. Is only economic development for sense gratification. And therefore, the people who are glorified are the people most concerned with economic development, namely in this age, well, at the beginning of Kali Yuga, before the Kali Yuga, the Brahmins who were trying to get liberation were considered to be first-class human beings. And when the Brahmins, starting with Sringhi, or maybe a little before that, probably said that in the fight between the demigods and the demons, the demigods sometimes would kill the demons, and they wound up taking birth on this planet as Brahmins, or kings. Our Krishna book, or Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, starts out with once the whole world was overburdened by the defense force of demoniac kings, who were actually demons in the disguise of rulers. So these people came from higher planetary systems, being defeated by the demigods, they took birth as kings on this planet. Or sometimes in the case of Sringhi, he was a Brahmin boy, but he actually had a demoniac mentality. And therefore he began the degradation of the Brahminical race by cursing Maharaj Parikshit, who was a saintly king. And then the Brahmins, when they lost their Brahmin Tejas, or at least their adherence to the Vedic culture, they started to exploit their position for sense gratification. Then the Kshatriyas, they more or less overruled the Brahminical class, and they became prominent. But of course, they also, without the help of Brahminical culture, without the direction towards liberation, they utilized the taxes instead of performing sacrifice, because after all, you need Brahmins to actually perform a real sacrifice. You need real Brahmins. Real Brahmins are not just, you know, you wait around for a little while and then you get a sacred thread and then you're really a Brahmin. But these Brahmins, and before Kali Yuga, they could chant the Vedic mantras, which means they were perfectly sense and mind controlled, in such a way as actually physically changed the material nature. They had such potency. When the Brahmins at the sacrifice of Maharaj Prithu were trying to perform their 101 Ashvamedha Jaga to surpass King Indra, who had only performed a mere 100 Ashvamedha Jagas. At that time, Indra, being envious, came and try to steal the horse that was meant for the sacrifice. After repeated attempts of trying to steal the horse, Prithu Maharaj decided that we'd offer Indra as part of the sacrifice. He asked the Brahmins to chant their mantra so that Indra would fall into the sacrifice. Swaha, Indra, Swaha. The Brahmins were so powerful that indeed Indra started to fall down from the sky and he was about to be part of the sacrifice, an unfortunate part of the sacrifice. He was about to become an oblation into the sacrifice. Of course, at this time, he was stopped. I believe Vishnu came and some others and told him, better not to do it. We need Indra. He may be a rascal, but we still need him. So he refrained from offering Indra as a sacrificial offering. But that means that the Brahmins were so powerful, they could even offer Indra into as a sacrifice, part of the sacrifice. When the Ashwini Kumaras had granted to Chaivana Muni, from which we get Chaivana Pras, not from him personally, but he made up the formula. He had granted the Ashwini Kumaras the right to drink Samarasa, of which the demigods had forbidden them. So Indra became angry, and he was about to throw his thunderbolt at Chaivana Muni, but Chaivana Muni, being an advanced Brahmin, chanted some mantra and froze Indra's arm in the act of throwing the thunderbolt. So powerful were the Brahmins. But that was because they were austere. They just didn't do anything on everything. They performed great austerities. Sometimes we have the case of someone like Vishwamrita Muni for 60,000 years at a time, just to become a Brahmin. Therefore, they were highly advanced in on the Brahminical platform of sense and mind control, and sama, dhamma, tapa, and austerity, socham, cleanliness. They were actually Brahmin. But when they disappeared, then the ability to perform sacrifice diminished, but still the Kshatriyas were collecting taxes. So what to do with the taxes? So they started to use it for their daughter's wedding, and that was it. India, daughter's weddings cost a lot. And the Kshatriyas had a lot of daughters, so they started to misuse the money, the income that was getting from being obtained from the landholders who were producing things. And therefore, utilizing these things for sense gratification, they gradually became degraded. They thought, let us just exploit the people for our taxes and utilize it for our sense gratification, because they had forgotten about sacrifice. Therefore, there was no practical benefit from such activities, or at least there was no practical benefit from the Vaishyas giving the Kshatriyas money, because they weren't getting anything in return. Namely, by sacrifice, then the weather would be exactly on time, the right amount of sunshine would be there, the right amount of rain and air, and everything was perfectly arranged so that the Vaishyas could obtain all their agricultural products with a minimum amount of effort. As well as, the arrangement was made by the material nature that the rivers and the lakes and the oceans were providing gold and jewels and pearls and all kinds of things like silk, and everything was nicely arranged by sacrifice. People recognized things didn't come about by accident. They had to please Krishna or Vishnu, and by pleasing Vishnu through sacrifices, then the demigods would rain prosperity on all. But without that jaga, without that sacrifice, it was just a waste of time giving the money to the Kshatriyas and the so-called Brahmins, because they weren't producing anything of value. There wasn't no reciprocation. Therefore, the Vaishyas took over the Kshatriya positions and made them more or less subservient, as we see in modern society. Govern people, they get so-called elected by the people who are Shudras. Shudras mean they have less intelligence. Therefore, they think that they're actually in control of the government, where actually the people in control of the government are the people who are paying for the government, the Vaishyas, the few Vaishyas, and there are very few, if there are any Vaishyas. We should say they're all Shudras, taking the part of Vaishyas. Shudras means that they're expert at cheating the other Shudras. Therefore, they're a little qualified as Vaishyas. And one of the ways they cheat them is that they make them believe that the Shudra is in control, and by electing their officials, who are actually just simply puppets in the hands of the people who are controlling both the Shudras and the politicians, and the so-called Brahmins, the educators, are simply educating people about all kinds of nonsense, inspiring them for remaining Shudras and becoming less than animals. So in Kali Yuga, there is no Dharma, there's no Kshatriyas, there's no Brahmins to explain about liberation. There's only a large number of Shudras being directed by a small number of Vaishyas. Everyone's simply interested in economic development for sense gratification. Therefore, in this age, the gloating it over material nature and keeping one's ability to do so is glorified like anything. That is like the goal of life. Stay in your office until Yamaraj and the Yamadutas drag you away. And people don't see as there is any other goal of life. And even the politicians, they see that they're remaining in office, simply exploiting the people. But if the politicians have, as the Romans did, some circus, if they're allowed to go into the Colosseum and watch gladiators kill each other, they thought it was worth handing over the power of authority to these wonderful leaders who have given us this circus and some bread, handing out some free bread or popcorn during the gladiator matches. They're so kind. But here we find a different mentality, that the Bhagavatam is not interested in the history of demons, nor is it interested in the history of the Kshatriyas lording it over the world, protecting the demoniac Shudras who are taking the role of Vaishyas or Brahmins or whatever else, protecting them so they can exploit the vast number of other Shudras, the bigger Shudras, Svavitra Hostra Karara, Samstuta Purusha Pashu, Yat Karma Patiyopeto Jatanamaga Dagraja, men who are like hogs and dogs and camels and asses, according to the Bhagavatam. I'm not getting heavy, I'm just repeating the Bhagavatam. They glorify, the small ones glorify the big, the small hogs, dogs, camels, and asses glorify the big hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. But they never glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who carries a club ready to hit them over the head. Gadagraja. But here we find the history of real Kshatriyas. They were not taking the position up to utilize it for their sense gratification. They were taking it up as strictly as a matter of duty in order to, and that duty is provide the support to the Brahmins to perform sacrifice. They had no other business. To protect the Vaishyas and the Shudras by seeing that they were properly performing their duty, and to employ the Brahmins for sacrifice, with the results of the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas results of their work. Therefore, by such activities, the Kshatriyas became elevated to the position eventually of Brahmins. When Lord Chaitanya was going around Navadvip, accepting different kinds of offerings coming from the different merchants and vendors in Navadvip, he came upon once astrologer. And he asked the astrologer, "My dear astrologer, can you tell me who I was in my last lifetime?" So this was not an ordinary astrologer. This was a very good astrologer. He, by meditation, he began to meditate upon what he saw, and then he saw this fish in an ocean. So he said, "A fish in the ocean?" He didn't want to tell Lord Chaitanya, "You were a fish in your last lifetime." And then he saw a tortoise, and he thought, "Wow." this doesn't sound like very good news to tell this Brahmin you were a fish. You swallowed some prasadam and you got elevated. If he saw a tortoise, then he saw this half man, half lion. So he said, it's a bad day. Why don't you come back tomorrow? Maybe I can concentrate a little bit better. So Lord Chaitanya said, think hard, think a little bit more deeply. And so he went back to meditation. He saw this Brahmin, half this dwarf Brahmin. Then he started to realize that now I know who you are, that you were the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your last lifetime. Lord Chaitanya said, no, you're not right. You don't know who I was. Actually, I know exactly who I was in my last lifetime. In my last lifetime, I was a Vaishya, the son of a Vaishya, and I very carefully protected cows. For that reason, in this lifetime, I became a Brahmin. This shows us, if we perform our duty, then we come to the platform of a real Brahmin. That is a real Brahmin who could perform sacrifice. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, performed Sankirtan Jaga as a prominent sacrifice in this age. So that's the real Brahminical platform. And those who are organizing society or even organizing our movement, it's all meant to organize for sacrifice, for the Sankirtan Jaga, or in previous eras, for deity worship, or for, they used to perform different types of Ashwamedha Jagas or whatever else, which were also, somehow or another, could be performed even in Dwapara Yuga, but more rarely than in the Treta Yuga. Therefore, Priyavrata is being glorified here, and also Swayambhuva, although the words here is Visha. He didn't give up nectar. Of course, modern people think if I gain more economic development for sense gratification, that's nectar. Prabhupada would always point out the Marquis of Jetland, who was formerly the governor of Bengal, who had come to Prabhupada's school at the Motilal College, the Scottish Church's College. The governor of Bengal had come and visited. And later on, because he had some association with India and with some culture, therefore he had asked one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, can you make me into a Brahmin? So the godbrother said, yes, no problem. You just follow four of the principles, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. And the Marquis of Jetland said, impossible. Here is a respectable person, Prabhupada said, a cultured person, and just the idea of having to control his mind and senses to follow these principles, he felt was impossible. So what to speak of an ordinary person in the so-called modern society? Or as Gandhi, when he came to England, on one time he came, and they asked him, what do you think of English civilization? And his response was, I think it would be a good idea. So of course, it's not that England doesn't have a civilization, and America does, or whatever else, but in modern civilization, people don't know what civilization means. Even according to Prabhupada in one purport, generally the Kshatriyas were not considered to be human beings in the Vedic culture. Life began as Brahminical culture. Because unless we can control our mind and senses and engage them according to the instructions of Krishna, then we're simply acting on the animal platform. Of course, it's not that every Kshatriya was an animal, but just by being on that platform, not necessarily one was actually controlling his mind and senses properly. Therefore, Parashuram, for instance, had to come 21 generations of Kshatriyas and kill them all because they weren't acting properly. We don't find 21 generations of Brahmins being killed by anyone. Of course, Kali Yuga is already, they've already disappeared. There's no Brahmins to kill anymore. Although the Rakshasas sometimes come and eat them, But that's probably why there's no Rakshasas around, because there's no food around here. In any case, these great personalities, they're actually on the exalted platform. Therefore, they understood that we do our duty, and by our duty, we're Krishna conscious. We maintain our Krishna consciousness. And therefore, when Swayambhuva had the opportunity, he wanted to fix his mind completely upon Krishna. It's not that he lost something valuable ruling over the universe, because he had something infinitely more valuable, actual consciousness of the spiritual universe. And being conscious of that spiritual universe, there is nothing but transcendental pleasure that goes on increasingly, increasing at every moment. On the other hand, ruling over the universe, you have to associate with so many persons who are less than highly elevated and try to satisfy them. It's like a father and mother, when they get children, they have to, well, theoretically or ideally, they put up with their children. They can't think, well, these are not the type of children I wanted. They have brown eyes, I wanted some with blue, so let's send them to the slaughterhouse until we get some blue-eyed children. Because nowadays, that's their mentality. But that's not very good parenthood. Similarly, you become, ideally, the parents, they accept whatever children they have and try to do the best, raise them in Krishna consciousness. Even the child may be blind, but to the mother he's Padmalochana, lotus-eyed. Similarly, one becomes the head of a country in the Vedic culture, or a planet, or a universe, then one has to tolerate so many different problems. Even it's said that Brahma, he was being criticized because he had, by the gopis, because he had created eyelashes. Eyelashes? What's that? Eyebrow? No. Eyelids, that were blinking. And therefore the gopis couldn't see Krishna. So even Lord Brahma, he does the best he can, even he gets criticized. That's the nature of being in that position. And no one likes criticism. Even Krishna doesn't like criticism. When Prashrena's the one who had the Shaimantaka jewel. Satrajit. Prasena, Satrajit had the Shaimantaka jewel. Does anyone know where the Shaimantaka jewel originally came from? What's that? Yes, and how did he get it? How did Satrajit get the... Yeah, but where did the sun god get the Shaimantaka jewel from? What's that? A snake? You think a snake has... No, that was a different one. That was the conch shell. Krishna's Karakola. Panchajanya, Krishna's... Well, what is Krishna's conch shell called? Panchajanya. That was the... He had gone and killed the conch shell demon, and it became Krishna's conch shell, because he was looking for the son of his teacher that asked to recover his son. Sandipani Muni and his wife had asked him, so he dove into the ocean looking for his son, because he had heard he had become swallowed by the conch shell demon. He found out he wasn't there, so he killed him and got him as the... His Karakola, that's Spanish. His conch shell. No, actually the jewel came from Krishna. That's Krishna's Kastuba jewel. He had given it to Srimati Radharani, And when after Krishna left Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani and Vishakha, and also Lalita, they were entering into the river Jamuna to commit suicide. Lalita was watching this, actually. She didn't commit suicide. But they had gone into the river Jamuna, but the sun god picked them up and brought them to their planet along with he got the Shaivantaka jewel. Later on, when he delivered, who was actually Radharani, who did he deliver her to? King Bhishmaka. No, it's Satya. Who is Satya? Oh no, actually it was Jambavan. All right, because Radharani is Ashi's Satyabhama, right? So Satyabhama came from, what's that? Yeah, so kind of, yeah, things are interesting. Something to keep our minds engaged. Yeah, Satyajit. So Satyajit got Satyabhama and he got the Shaivantaka jewel along with it. So that's why Satyabhama is actually Radharani in Krishna's pastimes. But when she's in Dwarka, her mood changes after some time. And what happened to Lalita? She jumped off Govardhan Hill to commit suicide. But just so happened, Jambavan was passing by and he caught her on the way down. So she became, who did she become? What's that? Jambavati, yes. And what happened to Vishakha? Who else did? Who's Vishakha in Dwarka? So we have Radharani is who became. There was Jambavati, there was Satyabhama, and there's Rukmini. So where's Rukmini? She Chandravali. Yeah. Anyhow, I can't remember either. Anyhow, it's a very intricate thing. Actually, Putana gets involved in this also. She stole Radharani and others after the, anyhow, it's a whole thing. You can read, I think it's Lalita Madhava explains all this. In any case, this Shaivantaka jewel is actually Krishna's Kastuba jewel, so he just got it back, really. They just returned to him. But in the meantime, Satyajit had stolen that jewel. Well, not stolen, I'm sorry. He had the jewel. Krishna asked Satyajit when he came to Dwarka to give the jewel to King Ugrasena. He said, no way. Because he was getting 80 mounds of gold a day, which is like hundreds of pounds of gold a day. I mean, that's a lot of Lakshmi nowadays. So he refused. And then later on, his brother Prasena, he took the jewel because he wanted to show off the family opulence. And he was riding around in the jungle, and one lion came and grabbed him and killed him along with his horse and took the jewel. I mean, the lion knew it was a nice jewel. Later on, Jambavan came, saw the dead horse, saw Prasena was dead, and saw the lion with the jewel, and killed the lion and took the jewel into his cave. Meanwhile, Satyajit, he started to spread rumors all around Dwarka that Krishna had stolen the jewel, and because he didn't get the jewel, he had stolen it. So Krishna didn't like his name being defamed either. It's not that I'm God, who cares, I'm aloof from all this. Now he went with his, because he was taking the role of a Kshatriya, even Lord Ramachandra, when his name was being defamed, he put his wife into the forest, of course, ultimately under Valmiki's care. The Kshatriyas, they can't rule very nicely if they don't have a good reputation. Who will really listen to them? And in the Veda culture, the Kshatriyas are very careful about their activities, especially exalted personalities such as Lord Ramachandra and Lord Krishna, in order to properly carry on their kingdoms. So he went with the exalted members of the community into the forest looking for the jewel and found the dead horse, and Prasena was dead. And then he saw the tracks of the lion, and then he followed the tracks, and he found Jambavan's footprints and followed them into the cave. And as we know, when he tried to get the jewel back, he fought with Jambavan day and night for 28 days until Jambavan realized that this is not an ordinary person and realized this is Lord Ramachandra, his master he was fighting with. And the happy ending is he got the jewel back and presented to Satyajit. Again, Satyajit took the jewel, and there was a conspiracy headed by, well, Saradanya and Akrura. Saradanya ultimately was the main conspirator, but there was Akrura and the other general from the army. I forget his name now. Anyhow, he was killed. I mean, this Kastuba jewels has quite a history. But the idea is that Krishna doesn't like his name being criticized either. Therefore, devotees, well, people should be respectable, and it's not bad to try to keep one's reputation. The Kshatriyas would try to maintain their reputation, and for all extent and purposes, to maintain the culture. In any case, these particular personalities, whether it be Swayambhuva Manu, or Priyavrata, or Narada Muni, or Lord Brahma, they all were interested ultimately in following the Veda culture, having properly performing sacrifices, so that things would go on in a proper way in the universe, and Krishna would be satisfied, and people would make progress towards liberation. So it is not that they took their positions for sense gratification, and when they do, everything becomes degraded. It means that there are no persons with brahminical prowess, and people in general are less intelligent. So in this age, we have no Kshatriyas, we have no Brahmins, we have no real Vaishyas who are protecting cows and protecting the land. We have only a bunch of Shudras. Some of them are more vicious than others. Some are more demoniac, and some are less demoniac. And we have a few Hare Krishnas. Therefore, the Hare Krishnas actually have a big responsibility to chant Hare Krishna, to perform the sacrifice in this age, because that is the sacrifice. The government is not giving any kind of, you can use the word facility, nor encouragement. As a matter of fact, they're just happy if the Hare Krishnas disappear. They would be happier if they just disappeared, stop bothering people. But even without, Prabhupada said, even without any encouragement, without any government support, Prabhupada was always trying to get government support. He told the police lieutenant, give us some building in Chicago and we can chant Hare Krishna and distribute prasadam. Considering, you know, Chicago, the state of Chicago, to go up to, at that particular time especially, perhaps now, and ask the government, give us a building so we can chant Hare Krishna in it, seemed less than reasonable. Prabhupada even told Tripurari Maharaj to go to the administrators in the Chicago airport, who is called O'Hare Airport, and ask them to change the name to O'Hare Krishna Airport. So Prabhupada had a different vision from other people. But that's also our mission. It's not that Prabhupada was trying to do things that are cute, that are completely unreasonable. That's also our mission, is to spread the jagga in this age, be act as the Brahmins, spread the Sankirtan movement, and try to engage the people who are the leaders in the society to help that, whether it's the Vaishyas or the Shudras or everyone, engage everyone in the Sankirtan movement of chanting Hare Krishna to do their part. Therefore, Prabhupada didn't try to change people's occupation often. George Harrison, he wanted him to keep on chanting Hare Krishna, although he was a musician. He didn't ask him to change and move into the temple. So, also I know that there was one famous ballet dancer, Prabhupada told him to keep on dancing, but do things in Krishna consciousness. He wanted the educators to educate in Krishna consciousness, so everyone can do that, but the sentence should be glorifying Krishna, gaining a taste for that. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes. Well, there may be a few sutras, but we don't want to get into too much criticism. Shudra is quite an exalted position. It means that you actually assist the other. But it says, Kalo Sudra Sambhava, everyone is born Shudra. And then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, by mind and education, they generally become less than animals. I'm just repeating, I don't know. Yes. No, anyone who does austerity and fixes the mind upon Krishna gains all kinds of mystic power. It's not their mystic power, it's Krishna's mystic power. Anyone who focuses his mind upon Krishna becomes gradually as powerful as Krishna is. The example is given, just like, normally speaking, we can't run very fast, maybe 20 kilometers an hour or something. That would be pretty fast. But if you get inside an airplane, although you may not even be running, but now you start going hundreds of kilometers an hour because you're identified with the airplane. You're situated in the airplane. Similarly, one who becomes Krishna conscious, then his activities become empowered because, not that the soul changes, but because the soul has put the body and the mind and the intelligence in contact with Krishna, therefore it's becoming spiritualized and Krishna takes control. So he can utilize the body, mind, and words as his instrument any way he wants, with as much potency. So it's not that we're women or we're men and that we, No, it's we surrender to Krishna and he can utilize our body, mind, words any way he wants to. It's just a question of how much we surrender. Therefore, a pure devotee has all mystic power. It doesn't matter, man, woman, or animal, whatever. If they're a pure devotee, if they're under Krishna's control, then they have all mystic power. What we find in the Vedic amongst the yogis, they've surrendered enough to Krishna that Krishna utilizes them as an instrument, but not enough fully that they're actually come to the full surrender. But because they've surrendered to a certain extent, therefore they act as instruments for Krishna in some way or another. Yes.
When the young guys was made a high creature, they were destroyed. Then the ladies and the children of the land from the garden were taken by our people to Sikhuna. So then I could understand the way they were attacked. But what happened with the remnants of the young guys?
You mean the people who stayed? Well, the Dwarka became inundated by a flood, and I guess anyone who was in there, around there at the time, how to be a good swimmer. So that whoever's left in Dwarka, we got a swimming lesson. And what happened to everyone else? It doesn't really, I have not seen anything mentioned. But generally, Krishna took practically everyone back with him, either to his next pastimes, or he put them back as demigods in the heavenly planets, or they went back to the spiritual world. I mean, anyone who lived in Dwarka was, you don't have to worry about them, they were doing all right. The infidel coward men, according to our acharyas, they were actually Krishna taking charge of the queens, but appearing as infidel cowherd men. Therefore, and Krishna took away Arjuna's power at that time because it was actually Krishna taking charge of his queens. Yes?
When I was just thinking about the reputation thing, that even one of the times you were saying that, what was this incident when you said, now you're looking for the reputation, that you might be making? Maybe the straight people. I can't remember, but what you said, the only thing he said was he has a reputation, but he doesn't have a reputation yet.
Yeah, I can't remember the. There was, of course, there was Damodar Pandit. He said that. Damodar Pandit, because Lord Chaitanya was seeing this young boy who was very attractive, son of a Brahmini who was a widow. So every day Lord Chaitanya was very affectionate to him. So Damodar Pandit started to criticize Lord Chaitanya that how you showing, he was intolerant. How can you show so much affection to this young boy? You'll be criticized because his mother is a young, beautiful girl who's a widow. Then maybe people may talk that actually there's some relationship. And then he mentions that, you know, it'll be spread like wildfire, and for a sannyasi, you know, his reputation is so important. One spot on a cloth, a black spot on a cloth, becomes very prominent, although it's only a small black spot. Yes?
The world is pretty much a false prestige with the world. This is also some kind of prestige.
Yeah, of course. Therefore, may your fame be glorified all of the three worlds. We want, just like we want Prabhupada to have a good reputation. Not that we don't really care what people say, you know, because Prabhupada's transcendental, he doesn't care. No, we want, without a good reputation, people won't listen to us. People think we're a crook, why will they? Well, of course, there are many crooks who would probably listen to us if they thought we were crooks. But people who are sincere, who want to make spiritual progress, they're looking for someone who's exemplary. Therefore, Prabhupada was concerned about the movement's reputation. That people should they should look at us as being thoroughly honest, as being actually Brahmins, and then they could trust us. How can you trust someone if you think they're not honest? So therefore he wanted us to act in a way that people would actually develop trust in us, and then they could actually hear the message properly. Seriously. Yeah, they criticized. He was chanting the name of the gopis. Some Brahmin boy came along and started to criticize. Why are you chanting the names of all these ladies? Why don't you chant Krishna's name? Do something pious so you can actually make some pious activity. So Lord Chaitanya became angry, ran after the Brahmin, and they all became very disturbed. How is it that this teacher dares to strike a Brahmin? If he does that again, we'll get together and we'll strike him. So they thought Lord Chaitanya was being impudent, daring to strike a Brahmin. So their minds became full of criticism against him, and therefore that's why he took sannyas, so they wouldn't offend him, and therefore go to hell. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol.